we countered. No, it won't work, Brennard said. Doug could sense him shaking his head inside his helmet. I can't ask people to take that kind of risk.
But look at the numbers, Doug insisted. We can do it.
Those numbers are shakier than a nervous guy with palsy in an earthquake, Brennard grumbled.
You'll be killing yourself otherwise, Doug said. That's the one really solid number we've got. If one man tries to do the whole job, he gets a lethal dose, no doubt about it.
Brennard rested his gloved hands on the thighs of his suit.
Listen up, people. I've taken risks like this before and lived through them. Truth is, I don't really give a damn if I live or die. I've had a full life, and I've got nothing much to look forward to except retirement. Like the man says, I'd rather wear out than rust out.
More machismo, Ree muttered. Bianca, Doug asked, where are your astronomical instruments? She hesitated a moment.
I carried them into the shelter as soon as it was put up, before we got the order to help with the digging.
Which shelter? Brennard asked.
The first one.
Okay, Doug said. So you could go to Shelter One and get your hands on the instruments?
Sure.
Isn't the second hopper right outside that shelter?
About 50 yards from the airlock, Brennard said.
So Killifer or somebody else could dash outside and load the instruments onto that hopper. No need to refuel the one we've already used.
I'll do it, Greenberg said, surprising Doug. I'll go with Bianca and load the instruments. It'll only take a couple of minutes, and then I've got an excuse to stay in Shelter One. Let one of those guys pull on a suit and sit out here for a while.
Good, said Doug, turning to Brennard. Then you and I can hop up to the summit.
You're not going, Brennard said.
I've got to, Doug answered firmly. The numbers prove it. Two people can get the job done before the exposure adds up to a lethal dose. One can't.
You are not going, Brennard said, emphasizing each word. I'm not going to risk my future boss's brother.
Half-brother, Doug said.
I'm not going to risk either half of you, replied Brennard.
Doug grinned inside his helmet. He made a joke. Good.
Besides, Brennard went on, I made a promise to your mother.
Doug jumped on that. You promised not to let me out of your sight.
How can you keep that promise if you go up to the mountaintop without me?
Brennard was not amused.
Don't split hairs with me, kid. I can't allow you to take that risk.
Very seriously, Doug replied, and I can't allow you to go by yourself.
Stavanger, I'm the commander here. I order you.
Besides, I can pilot the hopper if I have to, Doug said, actually enjoying the excitement.
This is getting weird, Ree said. Now we've got two macho flange heads.
I'm not going to let you take the risk, Brennard repeated firmly.
I'm not going to let you kill yourself, Doug answered.
Brennard got to his feet and loomed over Doug. Now listen.
A dead body doesn't constitute a legal claim, Doug said.
What?
If you die up on the mountaintop before you get the instruments set up, the corporation won't be able to make a legal claim to the area, Doug said.
Tapping the numbers on the screen, Doug added, and if you try to do this all by yourself, you're going to die.
For a moment there was silence in the bare little shelter. Doug heard nothing but his own breathing and the faint whir of the air fans in his suit.
Then Brennard broke into a low chuckle. All right. You're dead set on risking your neck.
We'll do it your way.
Ree repeated.
Two macho flange heads.
Greenberg said nothing.
I don't know about you, said Ginny Anson, but I could use a few hours' sleep.
Greg realized he had been awake more than 24 hours straight. The last 6 hours he had spent in Anson's office, anxiously watching, waiting for some word from Brennard's group. Nothing had come through, and the radiation from the solar flare was still lethally intense up on the surface. I'll go down to the control center, I guess, he said. Anson got up from her desk chair.
Don't you want to catch a few winks?
Shaking his head, Greg replied, I'm too keyed up to sleep.
Go back to the party, then.
Is it still going on? With a grin, she leaned across her desk and stabbed at the keyboard. The display screen showed the cave still jammed with dancing, drinking, chatting, laughing partygoers. They'll stay at it till the radiation level starts to decay. Greg felt his brows knitting into a frown. They'll be in some shape for working, won't they? Anson stiffened slightly. The party breaks up when the radiation starts going down. It takes several hours at least before the radiation's low enough to go out on the surface. They'll be ready for work by then.
Greg almost admired her. She could be a tigress when it came to defending her people.
Okay, maybe I'll drop in at the party. I'll stick my head in at the control center first, though.
Whatever, said Anson. She headed for the door, thinking, what this guy needs is to get laid.
Greg followed her out into the tunnel. Anson walked off toward her quarters. Greg went the other way, toward the control center. He was surprised to see Lev Brudnoy there, hovering morosely in his faded, stained coveralls over the three technicians working the comm consoles. There were two men and one woman sitting at the consoles, none of them the same as the crew he had seen several hours earlier. Nearly half the screens were still blank or so streaked with interference that they were useless.
"What are you doing here?" Greg asked, realizing how tactless it was as he spoke the words.
Brudnoy made an elaborate shrug.
"I worry."
"Me too," Greg admitted.
"I understand that a Yamagata vehicle has landed near Brennard's team."
"Yes," said Greg, feeling slightly annoyed that this guest, this farmer, knew as much about the situation as he did, probably a lot more.
Brudnoy read his face. "There are very few secrets in Moonbase, my friend."
"Really?"
"We are too small, too crowded to keep secrets," Brudnoy said. "It's a good thing, I think. Governments back on Earth, they thrive on secrecy. Not here. Here we are like a mere, a village. Everyone knows everyone."
"And everyone knows everybody else's business," Greg added.
Brudnoy smiled charmingly. "Within limits."
"Such as?"
Brudnoy placed a hand on the shoulder of the technician sitting nearest him. "For example, even if I knew who this lout of an electronics man was sleeping with these days, I would not broadcast the news. It would be impolite."
"And damn dangerous," said the tech, glaring up at Brudnoy with mock ferocity.
"Like a village," Greg muttered.
"Yes, like a village," said Brudnoy.
"You probably think of Moonbase as a subdivision of your corporation, with its organization chart and its lines of authority. Please throw that image out of your head. Think instead of a village. People come and go, it is true, but the social structure remains the same. In your country, you call it a small town, I think."
"Winesburg, Ohio," Greg said, almost sneering.
"Oh, no," Brudnoy answered immediately. "I read that decadent work when I was first studying your language. No, not like Winesburg. More like Fort Apache, without the Native Americans."
Greg blinked with surprise.
"Fort Apache? Who's our John Wayne, then?" "Why, Brennard, of course. And you will be the stiff-necked commandant of the fort, if you pardon the personal reference."
Greg automatically glanced down at the three technicians to see how much of this they were taking in. All three of them were bent intently over their screens, which made Greg think they were listening to Brudnoy for all they were worth, despite the headsets clamped to their ears.
"You think I'm stiff-necked?" Greg asked coldly. "Of course. Everyone is when they first come to Moonbase. It takes time to adjust to our village mentality, our small-town social structure."
Greg relaxed only slightly.
"Fort Apache," he repeated. "An outpost on a vast and dangerous frontier. That's what we are."
Brudnoy seemed to relish the concept. "Message coming in from Tucson," interrupted the chief technician. "Voice only. Radiation levels beginning to decrease slightly around Venus's orbit. We can expect the storm to end in 5 to 10 hours.
"Great."
Greg almost wanted to grab Brudnoy and hug him. Instead, he said to the chief tech, "How can we get the word to Brennard?" The technician shook his head. "There's nothing working in polar orbit right now."
"What about the armored satellite they sent up?"
"Crapped out in the radiation. We don't know if it even got its message down to Brennard."
"Can't you reactivate it?"
"It's dead."
"Then we've got to send up another one."
Another headshake. By the time we could get the last satellite hardened and launched, the radiation levels will be getting low enough for Brennard's people to figure it out for themselves.
"Damn it," Greg snarled. "I want a commsat put up."
Unperturbed, the technician said, "Only the base director can authorize that." Then he added sardonically, "Sir, Greg turned to Brudenoy.